Hey, y'all, this is Judson, producer of the Nullcast. This is part two in a two-part episode that we recorded earlier this week. It recaps the Florida game, Jimbo Fisher's talks to LSU, bowl projections, futures for the coaching staff for FSU as a whole, lots of different stuff. So I'm going to continue the conversation in a second, but before I do, I want to talk about the wonderful product that is sponsoring the Nullcast this year, and it's Louisiana Hot Sauce. It's a great, great hot sauce. It's the best on the market, in my opinion. Lowest price out of all of them. It tastes delicious. But with the Christmas season approaching, I feel like it's only right to talk about a Christmas tradition in my family, which is fried chicken on Christmas Day. And one of the great things we do with it is we use Louisiana hot sauce to marinate the chicken before we fry it. It gives it a delicious flavor. It gives it that heat and a savoriness that really cannot be copied by any other hot sauce or any other type of spice, unless you want to pay a lot more money. And it's just not going to be as effective. Louisiana hot sauce is the best product for so many different dishes, and I really invite all y'all to try it out. Post about it on Twitter, tag us, tag Louisiana hot sauce in your tweets, and they see how much you love it, and they see how much they love that we tell y'all about it. And it's just a big, happy family of synergy and greatness. So, without further ado, here's the rest of the conversation Budden Ingram had earlier this week regarding Florida State and college football in general.
Where do you want to go now? You want to talk bowl? You want to talk defense? You want to talk coaching changes at Florida State? We got a lot of topics we can do.
Let's do a little defensive postmortem, and then let's circle back to recruiting. Just have a brief review of people who made it to this game and kind of where Florida State sits right now.
Sure. So I think the major question people have right now is how much did this defense actually improve? Because at one point this year, it was looking pretty sketchy, you know?
Very.
I think people want to know, okay, did it really get that much better? And how do you separate the lack of quality competition played in the second half? How do you square that with the defensive improvement? You know, it's sort of the, yeah, Boise State scores a 1,000 points, but they play in the Mountain West back in the day, right? And I think that what you have to do is watch. So, yeah, Florida State's defense, all the problems are not fixed. And I still I think that people in general, despite the fact that I think we warned them not to do this, are assuming that all the problems are fixed. Well, look, Boston College, one of the worst offenses in the country. Florida is currently comprised one of the worst offenses in the country. Syracuse without its quarterback, pretty bad. NC State, nothing special. Wake, one of the worst offenses in the country. And Clemson, you know, is one of the best offenses in the country, and they put, what, 37 on you in Doak? So, you got to factor in the quality of competition heavily. Mm-hmm. And I don't trust that this defensive staff has got it fixed. But there are some elements that I think are fixed. I know one you touched on earlier, what was the health of the defensive line.
Certainly improved upon, and look, Naughty ended up being a lot of the things that we kind of heard coming into the year. He just didn't play at that level until the back half of it, and that's not an effort issue at all. As you mentioned, that's a health issue, and that kid was just a completely different player. I don't know that he would have – look, I mean, you could have had Joyner, Derek Gibson, and Andre Wadsworth, and I'm not sure you're going up to Louisville and winning that game. But the complexion of that defense, the complexion of any defense, is so different when you've got a defensive tackle in the middle who has the ability to be dominant. And Naughty was at that for the first half of the season, and was that for the second half. I would contend, Bud, even if you hadn't played a pretty significant level of competition, that just the defensive ineptitude still would have stuck in the back of enough people's minds from what you saw in the first game, the first half of the season, to still like have a need for change. You can't, obviously those games count. And when you're that woefully unprepared to play ball, then you still have to address that, and you still have to look at that. Obviously, you want to show a positive trajectory, and you want to improve as the season goes on. But there were times in this season, obviously all the games that are in the back of people's minds, and I don't need to rattle them off, but there were times in this year where the defense was just hilariously unprepared to play against things that weren't necessarily like crazy complex scheme and ideas. We couldn't, if somebody put somebody in motion, there was a 35% chance that Florida State was going to have a blown coverage. If they stacked wide receivers, it was a 50-50 bet there for a while that Florida State was just not going to have anybody within 15 yards of a guy. So certainly improvement made, but I don't think that improvement necessarily washes away the need for some significant internal discussion as to why this defense put the product that it did out for the first six games of the year.
I agree with you there. I do think that they made some other improvements that are noticeable, though. I think that the coaching staff got through to the players. Now, I know we can say, hey, they didn't play anybody in the second half. That's true. But they were allowing coverage busts against Charleston Southern, you know? The play Derwin James.
Derwin got injured on. Yeah, absolutely.
So if you look at that, to me, I didn't see guys running wide open for Boston College or NC State or Syracuse very often. And Syracuse's offense basically designed to try and hit those shot plays. Or Florida or really Clemson until Marshall got hurt there later on in the game. So I do think that the coaches found a better way to figure out what the players understood about their roles. And early on in the season, some sources had told us, hey, this staff moved too fast for some of the young guys. You know, that they assumed that young guys got one thing and they understood it and that thing was a building block, and then they moved on to something else. Now I think that they went back and they really doubled down and made sure the guys understood some of the more basic stuff before moving on to some of the more complex stuff. So I think they did good on that. And the linebacker play definitely improved as the season went on. Now, they were able to play a lot more 3-4 as the season went on. That means you're playing more Jacob Pugh on the outside and a little less nickel and dime, and that's because of the offenses you faced were more pro-style offenses. There are certainly still questions about how Florida State defends mobile quarterbacks and how they signal in their plays with tempo. Certainly not the only defense to struggle with tempo. Look, tempo hurts defenses. It puts more stress on them. And if you're not running some tempo on your own offense, you're only hurting your brother, especially if you have a lot of depth. But I do think that the linebackers were much better getting lined up and fitting their run. So that was good to see, too. Now, you can say, look, one way you can account for opponent quality is with advanced metrics. Right? Opponent adjusted defensive numbers. And it looks like Florida State in defensive S&P was 18th to finish the year, which is the top 20 defense. And you may say, how? But the key there is the defense is not as good as it looked in the second half of the year, but it also wasn't as bad as it looked in the first half of the year, because of the quality of opponent. Remember how we talked about in the first half of the year, it seemed like every time Florida State blew a coverage, that ball was just right on the receiver perfectly for a touchdown. You know, every time somebody got out of their gap, it felt like the running back hit it perfectly and went 60. That's because they were playing a really awesome slate of offenses to open up the year. So those defensive metrics take that into account. They say, okay, overall, despite the fact that their total schedule or that their second half schedule of offenses was not great, they're going to get a bump for having, you know, a lot of those big numbers hung on them by truly elite offenses, because those offenses hung great numbers on everybody else too. 18th is pretty solid. Now, I do think that it maybe fails to account for the fact that Syracuse didn't have its quarterback and that, you know, Wake Forest wasn't really trying to score. I think they're trying to get out of there healthy. And Florida was obviously incredibly banged up. But if you told me that this defense was like a top 25 defense nationally on the year, their total season performance was like a top 25 performance, I could buy that.
Yeah. I have a little bit of a hard time buying that. Just because of what we saw early, but, and you're right. I mean, Syracuse without their quarterback's a different team. But undoubtedly improvement was made, for a multitude of reasons. And I think your point about the, coaching staff being able to really connect with the team and have them understand what was needed is a good one. Obviously, we've spent some time talking about the emergence of Naughty and him being healthy and what that's meant. But there was, and I know this isn't necessarily what you're not arguing for, but there was such a disconnect between the staff and the team as far as what they understood. And some flat out, some effort concerns, if you want to phrase it that way, that I have a hard time putting too nice of a bow on this package and not really, expecting some changes to be made and for them to really evaluate why the product was as bad as it was, as far as what they put on the field at the beginning of the year.
I could certainly agree with that. Now, I think my contention was, I don't think this defense was the 18th best defense nationally. You know, I think it was worse than that. By saying top 25, I wasn't trying to compliment them. I was just trying to say, you know, I think that I was just trying to more accurately gauge it, I guess, and adjust for a little bit of some circumstantial stuff. Like, if UF had its offense that it had for most of the year, I think it would have probably scored an offensive touchdown against FSU for the first time since 2014. Let me ask you this, though. And I know we talked a little on the phone about this last night. Do you think Jimbo Fisher believes this defense is significantly better? Do you think he believes he has the right combination of defensive coaches? And if not, do you think he would admit it in the form of making defensive changes?
That's tough. I don't know. That's a really good question. I don't know what Fisher, obviously, I don't know what he internally believes. I certainly think there was a period of time where he had made his mind up about that. And then Jimbo Fisher is as every coach is such a prideful individual that I wonder how much that enters into his equation as to whether or not he maybe made a bit of a miscalculation as far as who's defense coordinator should be, or not so much who it should be, but that he went to the administration and got the contract that he did for Charles Kelly last year.
Right. I mean, if he internally thinks, man, I screwed up, I misevaluated Charles Kelly, this was a mistake on my part, do you think he could actually go and fire Charles Kelly? I don't know, after the first time that you really went to the administration and say, I want a big ass contract for a coordinator. I want, you know, $3.5 million guaranteed for a coordinator so that I don't lose into Auburn. Can you kind of, you know, tuck your tail and go to the administration? Maybe you can because you just turned down LSU. And you know, maybe that was the part of the discussion he had with Florida State. Like, look, you know, if I've made some mistakes here, hypothetically, FSU, maybe I'd like to be able to correct some of these. But I do think you need to bring in a different voice there. Not necessarily at defensive coordinator, but I think you need to have better and different voices in the back end of the defense. So whether that's changing DB coach or linebackers coach, I think you got to make some kind of change.
Right. I think we can take the idea of Charles Kelly being flat out fired probably off the table. I don't think that's going to happen. I think what a more realistic situation is that you move Kelly to a place where he's a damn good position coach. Always been a really good linebackers coach. I think you move him back there, and maybe you're looking at a situation where you bring in a co-defense coordinator or somebody to specifically work with the secondary. So that would be what I think is more of a realistic opportunity or possibility. I don't think that us waking up 10 days from now and seeing a morning headline that Florida State has flat out fired Charles Kelly is a realistic possibility at this point.
And the players seem to like him. I mean, I don't know that they have always played hard for him, which is concerning. And I don't know that he's always gotten through to them, but on a personal level, they do seem to like him. And the recruits, I mean, at least the ones that are, you know, like I know Stanford Samuels really likes him, and that's an important guy to hold on to as a legacy and a five-star corner who I think, as long as he puts on some weight, actually could be a true freshman starter potentially for you. I mean, he's really good. The DBs in this class that are very, very good seem to like Kelly quite a bit. But I do think they need to make some sort of defensive changes there. And I would like to see them bring in somebody. Everybody says Corey Raymond of LSU, and I get that, and I think that would be a great hire. If you could get him to be a DB coach slash co-coordinator and have Kelly co-coordinate and be the linebackers coach, right? I totally understand. And I like that he's been on Dave Aranda's staff because it's a different voice than just the Saban defense.
Right. Good point.
Which is what Jimbo wants to teach, but I think that's a great defense to run, but maybe having some other ideas too is not a bad idea. I think most Saban assistants, as we've seen, they definitely flame out as head coaches. Jimbo's like the lone exception. But I would look at somebody from the Big 12, right? I want because the Big 12 plays so much tempo, spread, quarterback run stuff. Give me somebody from the Big 12, and they don't have good defensive talent in that league, right? There's like they don't have good defensive linemen. They don't have good D talent because it's just not much of it out there. But like,
why is that? That's interesting. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I just find that to be pretty interesting.
Okay, a lot of it's geography, right? You have states that just don't produce for talent. I mean, Kansas, nothing. Right. Iowa, nothing. Nebraska, not in the Big 12 anymore, but nothing. The entire conference eats on Texas. I mean, West Virginia, nothing. It's just very hard to do. And just to have Texas support you as an entire league is tough. But, like, if I'm Jimbo, I'm saying, can I go find a staff that probably exceeded its performance on defense in the Big 12, exceeded its defensive talent level, maybe did some creative things that gave people some trouble. Maybe some of the Iowa State staff, or I don't know. I mean, obviously I would say Texas staff, but this year they were really, really bad on defense. Maybe go look there and see if you can find something. That's not a bad idea. And the Big 12 doesn't always pay great salaries either, so maybe you could actually give somebody a bump. I'm just trying to think outside the box here, as opposed to everybody's going to look, all right, who's the Saban connection? All right, look, which is probably the right way to do it because you know Jimbo and his Saban connection stuff. But maybe go look for somebody that's had real success defending spread and tempo. Or maybe, I know he wants money for more consultants and that type of stuff, like the quote-unquote shadow coaching staff like Bama has. Maybe bring in somebody like that as a consultant.
Decent chance that we get a extra spot on the coaching staff as well. Not just we as in Florida State, but everybody is going to have an 11th position to fill. So that's going to be that's going to be a game changer in general as far as seeing where people move and how that is filled up. And that's something for us to watch.
If that happens, you definitely, I think, are going to see the addition be used on the defensive side in the secondary. Maybe have a safety coach and a corner coach.
That would not surprise me at all.
I really hope they don't promote from the inside. You know, I know a lot of those guys on that staff, but I do think you need some fresh ideas, some fresh blood from outside that have some more experience defending the stuff that's given this defense trouble. Ingram, now it's time to tell you about our other sponsor here. For the Table Group, with fabulous restaurants in Tallahassee, like Madison Social, the great upscale sports pub right there in the shadow of Bill Campbell Stadium in Collegetown, and also Central, their great Italian joint. Had a chance to enjoy both of these. The shrimp Gino, which is the pasta di mare at Central. My wife had it, really good. Not a big pasta guy. She's from Louisiana, really, knows seafood and likes seafood a lot. She really enjoyed that. It was, I don't know how to describe the type of pasta it was, but shrimp with basil serrano pesto, garlic cream, lemon zest. Wasn't too heavy, but really, really good. That was a good meal. And then I also got to hit up Madso for brunch, and everybody really enjoyed that. Now, I didn't get the Nolcast Bloody Mary because that's only available on game days. But I did get a cool Bradley's sausage, which is a local sausage place there to South Georgia, North Florida. A Bradley sausage sandwich on a waffle bun. That didn't suck. And then a lot of people got the apple cider cinnamon infused pancakes. But the best thing that they had, and I was kind of jealous of my wife, so she ordered this, the pork belly Benedict. That was the star of the brunch. Number of creative cocktails too, a lot of different mimosa options. Nice weather on that Sunday. Wasn't too cold. Sun came out. Just another really good experience. And they're doing good things, man. I mean, they just consistently give you a good product in a fun atmosphere. And if you're local or not, it's good to go and hit up the For the Table group with Madison Social and Central.
While we're on the topic of coaching and the Big 12 that you mentioned there, let's touch real briefly Tim Brewster and the possibility of him being tied to the Texas job.
Yeah, Tim Brewster, Florida State's tight end coach. People don't know, by far the best recruiter on staff. Really, Florida State's ace, their closer. Tom Herman got the job at Texas, and immediately rumors sprang up that Texas would be pursuing Tim Brewster, probably to be its receivers coach. Now, Brewster currently is FSU's tight ends coach and is the highest paid tight ends coach in the country. I think he makes like $470 or something. So that's an interesting development, given that Brewster was probably the best recruiter Texas has had in a long time. I mean, he got Vince Young out of Houston back in the day, and Vince Young got Texas a national title. So that worked out pretty well for him, and people there remember that very fondly. So the thing is, if Brewster wants to be a head coach again, like things people have heard he does, how does he get there? Now, he has no coordinator experience from what I can tell. His tenure at Minnesota was pretty much a disaster.
Historically bad.
Yeah, I mean, just, well, and numbers-wise, but people remember that as just a mess after taking over from a guy that was pretty successful in Glenn Mason. What title could you offer him? Like, you can't give him a co-coordinator title at Florida State because they already have two co-coordinators in Randy Sanders and Lawrence Dawsey. You know, what could Texas offer? Maybe Texas could make him a co-coordinator. If they do, if they're like, hey, you're a co-coordinator, maybe he jumps Texas. But I spoke to Alexander Marshall, Florida State's tight end recruit, and not that I would expect him to come away thinking anything else, but he seemed adamant that Tim Brewster's not leaving. Yesterday, we know Tim Brewster was in Texas recruiting Wilson, the D-tackle, and then also Houston Will, area. The offensive tackle, right, out right. of Houston. I don't think him leaving will be about money necessarily, but if he gets some really big title at Texas and becomes their ace recruiter, I could see it happening. I mean, if you want the title, now, I guess Florida State could give him like an assistant head coach title, but they already have one on staff in Rick Trickett. And I know, you know, you had a thought on this. How many guys with titles like that do you really want on your staff? Does that start to impact things?
Yeah, we did talk about this briefly last night. I'm never a huge fan of that, and by no means was this the cause of the great decline that Florida State went through in the mid to late 2000s. But I mean, it got to be comical as to how many people had the title head coach in there. You know, you had associate head coaches, assistant head coaches. You know, Mickey, Chuck, all these guys had head coach in their title, and it was downright laughable. So it doesn't, you know, what somebody's title is a whole lot more in ceremony than it is in practice. But I'm never a huge fan of having a bunch of people on staff with that as their job title.
I agree with you there. Now for Brewster, would I make an exception? Probably. I also think that look, there could be an understanding, right? And be like, hey, yeah, you're the co-coordinator, wink, wink. You're the assistant head coach, wink, wink. And you come to an understanding with the head coach and with the other coaches that that is a title to impress potential job suitors.
Do you maybe already have one of those on staff right now? I mean, sure. Is Dossie really your offensive co-coordinator? I understand completely where you're going there.
The key is that you can't allow your coaches to buy into it and think, I'm the assistant head coach. I have rank over you, like Amato tried to do. Right?
Exactly.
Like, that's got to be understood. I'm giving you these titles so that I can get the university to give you more money, and I'm giving you these titles so that your potential future employers are more impressed. But the hierarchy is not changing.
Couldn't have said it better.
It takes a strong head coach to pull that off, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes personalities that are willing to accept that and not be, you know, the Chuck Amato clown show that came about because of that. So we'll see how that plays out. I don't doubt or I don't fault Brewster for wanting to be a head coach. I mean, that's kind of a natural thing. I'm just curious as to where he really thinks that's going to be and what's going to happen with that. I mean, so you go to Texas, you have that title.
He's 56.
Are you wanting to be Texas Tech's head coach at some point? Or, I mean, I just don't know what – you're not going to get a, you know, the job. You're probably not even going to get, one of the second or third tier jobs. I don't fault anybody for wanting to have ambition and wanting to, you know, run their own show for a while. But I just don't know that that's ever going to lead to him really being on top of a viable program.
I wonder too, Ingram, and I agree. I mean, he's going to be 57 in October. You know, LSU did something interesting that they have like a dedicated, not player personnel guy, but like a GM now, Austin Thomas. If you guys Google this, you can see what I'm talking about. I wonder if you couldn't add like a title like that, like something greater than recruiting coordinator, you know, because that's really Brewster's value to this team. I mean, game planning, tight ends coaching, whatever. His value to the program is that he acquires talent, and he does it a lot better than everybody else on his staff. I think maybe you could work something like that. We're just speculating here on a Wednesday morning, but it's interesting.
Look, Bud and I have devoted, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes talking to this. We certainly believe and acknowledge what Brewster is. So I don't want my comment that I'm about to make to come off the wrong way. Would there not almost be a healthy or could you not argue that perhaps it would be healthy for the program to see him leave and to see him take another job as far as what the repercussions and ramifications would be in a situation like that?
Okay, so I definitely see where you're going with this. I'm just trying to figure out how we can express this to the listeners. And I think the way that we do it is if you lose Tim Brewster, I think you got to fire three other coaches on this staff to bring in good recruiters to make up for the loss of Brewster.
Because it makes you address, yeah. It makes you address an issue that's been present for a couple years now, and you're going exactly in the direction that I started to look at there. You cannot get by with your current staff if you don't have Brewster. Now that's an understatement. Thanks a lot, Ingram. That's pretty telling. But I think it makes you address issues that have maybe been there for a couple years and that you've been able to not look at and fully take on. Because you've had Tim Brewster. This is a staff that, you know, look, Florida State does very, very well on the recruiting trail. Don't get me wrong, but there's a unhealthy over-reliance on one individual. And certainly if he's not there, then that can't be the case anymore.
Specifically for hunting the elite four and five stars out of state. Yeah.
Yep.
He's your big game hunter. If you don't have him, you really got to improve your success rate across the board, and I think you'd have to, you know, maybe get a new linebackers coach or running back coach or offensive line coach or receivers coach, or I don't know, maybe you go to one defensive line coach instead of two and shift some things around. If you lose Brewster and you don't make any other changes on the staff, you are going to take a big recruiting hit. And Florida State's recruiting this year is good, but it's not as good as it was last year. That national title team is another year in the rearview window. You're 10th right now in recruiting. You're not even the best in the ACC. Clemson's got a better class than you do right now. And I don't think it's all that close, to be honest. That's not a great sign. You know, mm-hmm. Miami is not as good as you in recruiting, but they're not like that far off as it currently stands. Now, I think Florida State's going to sign some more studs down the stretch and distance itself from Miami and from Florida, personally. But it's not like they're lighting the world on fire in recruiting this year. You know, they're behind Georgia by a large margin. They're behind LSU by a large margin, behind Oklahoma, behind Alabama and Ohio State. I mean, those schools are just in another stratosphere right now. They also happen to have probably the two best college coaches in my lifetime coaching. So, you know, if you lose Brewster, you got to make some changes elsewhere. You can't just fill the position.
Well, it'll be something that we'll look at. And like you said, Brewster was out recruiting with Odell Huggins yesterday in the Houston area, a guy that has been Florida State's kind of a big game hunter and has been more or less anybody that's associated with an out-of-state five-star prospect, certainly an out-of-region five-star prospect since he's been here. And it would be a loss. We're not trying to sugarcoat that, but perhaps there would be some positive ramifications if you can't have this incredible over reliance on one particular character. But a conversation that we'll continue to have and something that we'll look at and kind of monitor how this evolves over the next couple of weeks.
This concludes this episode of the Nolcast. Make sure to rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter @Nolcast and email us at thenolcast@gmail.com. Thanks and see y'all next time. For Button Ingram, this is the Nolcast signing out.